Awesome. Good. You guys can hear me? Hi, I'm Tanya, an alcoholic. And my sobriety date is, I'm going to remember, 25th of February 2009. And that's by the grace of God, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Good sponsorship, right? And you people out there are helping me out every day, even when you don't know it. So before I start, I have a confession to make. I scared Will because I was running late, and I owe my sponsee an apology because I did exactly what I recommended she not do, which is wait to the last minute to leave, right? Because there is, who knew, there's a, I guess a hockey game, and that impeded my progress on getting here. That and leaving late. So while I learned from, she may have learned a lesson from me, I also learned a lesson from her about, like, leave on time or leave early and expect to get to places early. So Will, my apologies, my brother. So thank you for being here tonight for me and helping me stay sober tonight. Before I am kind of a big book thumper, but I'm not, really. But I am going to quote something out of the big book because I think it applies to me. I know it applies to me. But what about the real alcoholic? He may start off as a moderate drinker. He may or may not become a continuous hard drinker. But at some stage of his drinking career, he begins to lose all control of his liquor consumption once he starts to drink. I don't know if that's anybody else's story, but it is definitely my story. I started drinking when I was probably about the same height, but I was very young. I was in elementary. I was celebrating going from the sixth grade to the seventh grade, because that's like, woohoo, big stuff, right? I was going to, at that time, I feel so old. Anyway, I was going to junior high school, right? And so I got with some friends, and we mixed up some alcohol out of our parents' bars. Those little, you guys, well, you may remember, airplane bottles. Anybody ever seen an airplane bottle? Okay. Just give me a north-south if you're following me. And so we mixed it up, and we put it in some ginger ale and got sick. But I thought it tasted pretty good with the ginger ale, kind of cut the taste. And so for a while, I could take it or leave it. I didn't stop there. I could take it or leave it. And part of my story, and I'm going to talk about it, is other substances, other mind-altering substances, but I'm not going to hit on it a whole lot because this is Alcoholics Anonymous, but it is part of my story. And it may be part of yours, so it all kind of goes together for me. So I'm going through junior high school, and I'm starting to, you know, like, trying to figure out, who am I? Who should I be hanging out with? And most of my life, I was the jock, or the female jock, whatever that was back then. I was into softball, baseball, basketball, running track, da-da-da-da, you name it, I did it. But there was this other part of me that wanted to hang out with this other group who wasn't doing that stuff. And they were going to parties, they looked like they were having more fun. And so I was torn between these two people inside of my head, right? Which one are you? Which one are you going to hang with? And so I tried to do both for a very long time in my life. I tried to play multiple people in my head and in my appearances to other people. And I was never really this person, or this person, or this person, unless I was with you. So I was with you, then I'm going to be the athlete. If I'm with you, we're going to drink and party. I'm with you, we're just going to do homework. Right? And so all of these people living in my head became confusing at a point. And at times, I would drown it out with alcohol, if we could get it, and with other substances I started to use as well. And so things are going pretty good-ish, and I'm in junior high, and I get caught with somebody else's substances in my locker. That particular day, I had not been using them, but I had been using them, that's why they were in my locker. I get suspended, they go home, all's good with them, right? And I come back, and they give me an award. I know, right? I get an award from the school for being a great student. So I'm like, that's a pretty good deal. Get kicked out, 5 days off, mother staring at me like I've lost my freaking mind. But I get an award when I come back. So I come back, and then I go through high school, and I start to have some stumbling blocks in high school. Homework is actually a thing you're supposed to do, from what I understand. But I made it through, and I went on into college. Well, in college, I went to college a long, 45 minutes away from where I grew up, which in my mind was a long distance. And that was, at the time, it might have been even a long distance phone call. Because we had pay phones, we didn't have cell phones. The dark ages, right? So I went there, and I was able to do all the things I wanted to do, because there was nobody telling me I couldn't do it. So I was experimenting with all sorts of things, and hanging out, and really class became real optional at that point. But I made it through. The two things, I had rules. I set up some rules around my drinking already. And the rule was, you have to get up and go to lab, no matter what. And labs were on Tuesdays and Thursdays. The other classes are kind of optional. So I went to a small college, and you had to have a note, a reason why you missed more than three classes. You can miss three, but if you missed more than three, you had to have like some physical evidence before the internet that you could use. So I think I killed off my grandmother like three times. I had all sorts of deaths in my family and illnesses, and the lies just began to pile up to one point when the teacher said, I thought your grandmother already passed away. It's like, oh, my other grandmother. Right? So I'm starting to build stories around doing what I want to do and getting rewarded in the meantime, and I'm sort of getting by pretty good in school. I finally decide, you know, what am I going to do with my life? And I said, I'm going to go in the Army. Because I took a survey and it said I liked uniforms. So I said, I'm going to do that because I like uniforms. So I went into the Army, got a scholarship, whatever, and went into the Army, was doing ROTC. And I was kind of making it, but I was... You know, I'm the person that will do the bare minimum to get by. I don't know if anybody else has that experience, but I had a lot of wasted talent probably in my back pocket. And I would just do whatever it took, right? If I can get a C, then I'm good. If I can get a B, whatever. And I just, you know, I didn't strive to have straight A's, never like a plan in my life. So when I went into the Army, I had to stop doing the other substances. Boom, gave that up right away, no problem. Didn't even think about it, didn't even look back. Never looked back at that. And that's a lie, because I'll tell you about it when I did look back, when I couldn't get alcohol. So, but alcohol was still a thing. So I went to Germany, my first duty station, and I was a beer connoisseur, because in every little town, there's a different type of beer, at least like two or three different types of beer. And then my beer consumption started to grow and grow. At that point, I really didn't like hard liquor because it made me sick. So I go through my career halfway through, and I get a call. And they said, we need to talk to you about your security clearance. You need what? Well, it says on here you haven't seen so-and-so. And so-and-so says he has seen you. That was my former husband, my first former husband. It's like, so? So they suspended my clearance. Having your clearance suspended is like the next to the worst thing you can ever do in the Army. And so my clearance was suspended. I thought I was going to get like jail time and all of this stuff. And as it turned out, the period of time in which they could charge me had expired. So they gave me a slap on the hand, and I kept going. But in the meantime, I was supposed to get promoted, say, like tomorrow, right? And everybody who's been getting promoted tomorrow, raise your hand. So I raised my hand, like, so no, not so fast, Grasshopper, not you. Even I'm not getting promoted tomorrow. My family's coming in, and all this stuff is happening. You know, we've got cake, because you've got to have cake, right? We have cake and all this stuff. My father's going to pin me and all this, and they're saying, no, not you. Matter of fact, you need to go to another base to do your work. And so I had to explain that to my parents. I didn't explain them the whole story, because I didn't want to hurt their feelings. But it was a significant emotional event. And part of that, was I drinking when I did all of that? I was. But was drinking the root cause of that? No, it wasn't. It was my inability to face up to who I was and what I had done, and inability to tell the truth about what I had done and accept it. So time goes on, get my clearance back. I always have this odd promotion date. And people are like, how come your promotion date is like 30 days? Or it's like an odd date. So I get through that. As I get closer to retirement from the Army, my drinking really begins to pick up. I'm on my second marriage. Second husband hasn't. I left the first one. I get bragging rights for that. The second one left me in a Dear Jane email that somebody passed from a third party to me, that he was leaving, he was packing up the house. I was deployed, and he was packing up the house, and he was taking stuff out. And where I was deployed, but I could drink where I was. So that was kind of, I got over that. Towards the end of my career, though, when I was about to retire, I was in a place that I could not drink. I was in Iraq, and I was deployed overseas and couldn't drink. That was like rule number one. No drinking, no sex, no having fun, no whatever. And so I went back to my other substances. I broke my back, and so I had to get muscle relaxers. Muscle relaxers and cough medicine. What does it do? Besides mess up your liver, it gives you a buzz. And so that's how I coped in that period of time. You know, it's like I stopped drinking. I didn't stop drinking. I mean, I'm not in the alcohol, but I had other substances to fill in for that. So I get out. I'm about to get out. So all through that, all through all of those episodes of almost losing clearance, losing job, this and that, and stuff like that, I never got a DWI. To this date, I still have. I have a lot of not yets. I have not had a DWI. I have not been arrested. I was pulled over in sobriety, so I don't know if that counts. And I haven't been to an institution. But what had happened was, I was going through a checklist and I was like, you know what, I think my drinking is getting out of control. And while I had some left and right...
Keep talking.
While I had some left and right, this is like a text message. While I had some left and right standards that I wouldn't pass, I had some boundaries on my drinking. The same ones I had for when I was in college, you know, don't drink before you go to lab, this and that. I had started to break all of those. I had started to, like, if I woke up and there's still beer in the cup, I finished it. If I had a rule where I would not drink, I would only drink on the weekends. Well, Sunday's not really the week. Sunday night's not really the weekend, so it's okay. And then I would start to break the rules during the week. Well, there's basketball and stuff on Thursdays, whatever days, right? And all of the rules I set up so I wouldn't drink, I broke every last one of those. And the biggest one was I won't drink in the morning. And when I started finishing beer and everything in the morning, I knew that I probably had a problem there. There's probably something I needed to do. I was living in my townhome that my second spouse left. And I was watching the Olympics, whatever year that was. And I had beer in the refrigerator. And all I was doing was watching the Olympics, getting beer, going to the bathroom. I just had this cycle. I had my own little Olympic track in the house. I was going to go do stuff. I would put, we had recycling bins, now it's cans, but I would put my recycling, my beer and all the other stuff, and other people's recycling, so you didn't know I was drinking. I went to different stores, so you wouldn't know I was drinking that much. Right? You all freaking knew what I was doing, because you knew who I was. I would walk into places and say, hey, T, what's going on, right? I was flying somewhere, I was in the airport, and so I went and bought a sandwich at one place, and I wanted to go to my favorite bar and have a drink and have my sandwich. And so I walked in, sat down, was opening my sandwich, and the waitress said, you can't bring in outside food. So I'm indignant. Do you know who I am? And I went ballistic, right? I'm lucky I got on the plane. The bartender walked over and said, it's okay, I know her. That's how much I'd been to that bar. That she knew who I was and how I was going to drink and what I needed to do. And she just kind of killed the whole situation. I mean, there were so many instances for me where I broke the rules that I set against my drinking so I wouldn't get in trouble. The only thing I think I did, well, no, I can't say that either. I probably did drive drunk. Because in the morning, I probably still had alcohol in my system when I got in the car and I drove to work. I'm pretty sure if somebody had given me a test, I probably would have failed. But I was fortunate that didn't happen, or maybe not, I don't know. And all along that way, people kept giving me breaks, right? I get the award, I get the promotion, I get this and I get that. And they're like, oh, she's good, she's working hard, it's all good. What she's doing on her off time, it's okay, right? And I know I went to work with alcohol in my breath. I know that it was sweating out of my pores because I was in the Middle East, so I was sweating a lot. I knew it was sweating out of my pores. I knew people could, I know now, people could probably smell it. I, however, thought, it's all good. Nobody can smell it, nobody knows I'm drinking that much. So the last few weeks before I, about a month before I started to retire, I got sort of honest on a survey. Has anybody ever taken one of the surveys, how much you drink? Come on, there's only three of us, right? So if you haven't, you should probably take it. It was enlightening. And I checked all the answers and I went, holy crap, this isn't good. So I went back and I changed all the answers, or most of the answers. And even though I changed the answers, she still said, you need to go to drug and alcohol counseling. And I was like, what the fuck? You know, I thought I knew what I was doing, right? And as I'm going through my exit physical, they're like, so do you drink? I'm like, yeah, you know. And they gave me this answer of, are you a social drinker? And I'm like, yeah, social drinker. I don't know what a social drinker is. I don't even know what that means. Was that my vocabulary? So they took my blood work, and they said, your liver enzymes are high. They looked concerned, so I thought I should look concerned, too. When I was taking those painkillers and muscle relaxers and Tylenol and drinking cough medicine and alcohol, I misread the bottle. I thought it said, if you take X, you can still drink. What it said was, don't drink if you're taking X number of pills. And so my liver enzyme stayed high for quite a long time during my sobriety, and they just recently, in the last couple of years, come down. So note to self, praise God, but note to self, this stuff is serious, man. It can mess with you. So I ended up in I took a test. So now I go to the substance abuse counselor, denying that I have a problem. And I take yet another test. And the doctor comes out and he says, you are a narcissistic sadist, or something like that. In my head, it translated that I was a mean bee, right? And that was absolutely right. I was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. I could be nice one day, you never knew what time you were going to get. Right? Particularly if I hadn't had a drink, and I really wanted a drink, the not-so-nice time was going to eventually come out. Right? And so, but I didn't know any of this until I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that withdrawals were a thing, that alcohol could actually kill me, that without alcohol, my personality changes. With alcohol, my personality, I wasn't cognizant of that. I just know that I felt good. It made me forget things. It helped me to get through the night. And I used to do this thing called going to sleep, which was actually, I found out, passing out. Right? And I later found out that I was a blackout drinker. It's like, what is a blackout drinker? So they explained it as, oh, it's crap. That's what my ex was talking, that's what my former husband was talking about. That I'd say and do all these things and become really angry. I was an angry drunk at times. And so I found those things out through working the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I go to this counselor for a few months and we're jockeying back and forth. And she says, tell you what. No, first the nurse said, stop drinking for 2 weeks, we'll come back. Your blood test was probably wrong. She's like, okay. So I stopped drinking for a week and a half. Close enough, right? Then I started drinking near beer. I was like, it's kind of expensive, so I'm just going to drink beer. So I rationalized drinking beer again. And I went back, and my enzymes are still high. And that's when they said, you might have a problem. So I went to the substance abuse counselor, and she said, let's stop drinking from, I think it was Thanksgiving through Christmas or New Year's. I was like, that's crazy. Who doesn't drink during the holidays? I said, I think you've gone too far. We are not doing that. And so I didn't do it. I couldn't do it. I tried. I would try to stop drinking for 2 weeks, and I couldn't do it. I would drink again. I try again, and I drink again. And so I kept seeing, you know, through different places I lived, I saw people outside smoking outside of houses and stuff. I now suspect those were AA clubhouses, but I had nothing to do with that, right? And so the counselor asked me at one point, she was tough, just like yours is tough. Mine was, yeah, I could have called her names, and probably did. She was really tough on me, and I was like, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. You're not an alcoholic. She said, no, I'm an Al-Anon. And I was like, oh, because by then I knew what Al-Anon was. But the gig was up. She knew what an alcoholic was, and she was married to one at one point. And so she put me through some cases, and she asked me, do you want to go to like a group thing? And I was like, nope, not good. I'm just going to come here and talk to you a couple, 3 times a week, and that's it. And so for about 60 days, we played that game. And then in February, on the 24th, I picked up my last drink as of, anyway, 2009. And it wasn't anything spectacular. I didn't flame out and get passed out or anything. It was, I don't even know what it's called. What's those little bottles? Somebody knows. Pint? Fit. That's a fifth? Dude, okay. So I drank a little bottle. and whatnot. And I went to my first AA meeting the following day. And I was giving it up yet again for 40 days for Lent. Because I'd done it before. But on day 39, I was ready to give. Right? 40 days up, I proved my point, I can drink again. But this time I didn't. I did something different. I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was a room pretty much like this, lots of people, speakers, and I would have never, whoever raised your hand, bless you. That was so not me. They had to kick me out of my chair to go get what we have is 24-hour chips. The guy I was sitting next to looked like my uncle, so I was like, oh, he looks familiar, so I'll sit next to him. And he kicked me up and he said, go get your chip. So I went and got my chip. And the lady that gave me that chip told me if I want to drink, put it in my mouth, and if it melts, I can drink. That's how she became my sponsor now. She became my sponsor. But we didn't figure that out for a while, but she actually gave me my first chip, which was pretty exciting. And so after that meeting, women ran up and we had what they call Where and When. Now we have a meeting guide, I don't know how you do it now. But in the Where and When, they circled a bunch of meetings that they were going to meet me in. Circled a bunch. And they put their phone numbers, and I still have this book. They put their phone numbers and names in the back. And it's like, I'm not calling women. What the hell? Why can't I call men? This makes no sense to me. And back off, you people are making me nervous. And so I went to a meeting the next day, and they were there. Then I went to a meeting that next day, and they were there. Now, the meeting the next day, I did some cursing because I got locked. I got stuck in a parking lot with all these AA people all packed in. I couldn't get my car out, but different story. So that Friday night, I think it was that Friday night, I went to a meeting, and they told me, let's go to dinner. And I said, I went to dinner afterwards, and it was like really cool. So after dinner afterwards, we all went, we were leaving, I said goodbye, got to go to the bathroom. They left, I thought, they actually waited outside and were about to come get me because they thought I was going to drink. And that's when I felt the love of Alcoholics Anonymous. Strangers standing outside of a women's bathroom and outside the restaurant, making sure that I didn't take a drink again. And that's the way it's been for me the entire time that I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I will tell you, it hasn't all been puppies and rainbows, whatever they always say. It hasn't always been great times. I went through these steps. I really wanted to do my fourth and fifth step because I wanted to know why I drank. It's easy for me to say I drank, right? But I wanted to know why I drank and what were the causes and conditions that caused me to drink. And then I wanted to help get it help addressing those causes and conditions. But one of the biggest things I've learned through all of this is I have to have a higher power to do that. Having a sponsor and all that good stuff, and you guys are awesome people, but you're not always there. There's been, and when I first got sober, there were times I was in a bathroom praying on my knees in the bathroom stall for God to help me not to drink. Because y'all did dance with your friends. But you called back. Every last one of you freaking called back. That love that we have in these rooms and that caring for each other just continues through all things good, thick and thin, through ups and downs. We celebrate each other's we celebrate each other's successes, and we also console each other during our problems and trials and tribulations. I come here, those separate people that I was when I first, that I talked about earlier, are starting to become one person. So that when I see you, you see me. You see all of me. I don't have to be this person for you, and this person for you, and this person for you. I can just be me and become comfortable in my own skin. When I got to 8 and 9, there were some trials and tribulations in that, some experimentation. I did my amends, most of my amends, and one of them I was like, I'm getting my sponsor. She said, why don't we wait a year before you do this one? What she said was, that's what I heard. And I began to hunt down that second spouse. And I was going to make an amends because it was going to go something like this. I'm really sorry I lied. And he was going to say, and I'm really sorry I did this. Yeah, I know, right? You were so wrong when you did that. And we were just going to have a back and forth. And he was going to make an amends to me, which was not the purpose of the amends. The purpose of the amends is for me to claim my side of the street and amend my behavior as life goes on. So when I started looking for him, she said, no, that's not what I told you. I said, let's talk about it in a year, not go do it in a year. And so God saw that I didn't see him in that year, and I didn't screw that one up. When I get down to 10, 11, and 12, some people will call those the maintenance steps. I call those the reintroduction to the world steps. Because I'm getting to know myself in the first steps. Right? I'm getting to know who Tanya is and who Tanya isn't. Who God would have me to be and who would have me not to be. And then in the middle steps, I'm trying to, kind of cleaning up some of that stuff with God's help, or my higher power's help. And in 10, 11, and 12, I'm learning how to use that in the world, right? I'm learning how that I can survive outside the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can be a person out there. Now, I would tell you, the last 3 years have not been stellar years for me, and the last 6 months, 7 months have been, everything that I was on my fear inventory happened. Right? My father passed away last August. And I say that because what happened was, the first thing I did was go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's what I was taught. Next thing I did was call my sponsor. Sponsors are important, super important. And then sponsees started calling me. Sometimes sponsees help the sponsor more than you know. And those calls and cards that they send. And then the second thing that happened, so I'm sitting at work, that I talked about earlier, I don't remember, it's in my life, but I remember. Hey, who's getting promoted tomorrow? Not you. I get this phone call, hey, we need to talk to you. And I'm like, oh, cool. What's up? And he said, you probably want to close your door. What? And so we're sending you an email, we need you to open it and read it. And it was a letter proposing to remove me from my position and from the agency that I was working for. Talk about a gut hit on a Tuesday morning, right? Not expecting it. Double take. And so what happened was, 3 years prior, I kind of went through a dry spell. I did. And so I had this gentleman that worked for me, and I called him SOB, explicatives, with my sponsor, and she finally said, what's his name? And I said, it's X. She said, well, we're going to call him X. From now on, he has a name, we're going to call him that. And so I thought I was on the road to forgiveness with this guy, but I was not. I was not. I still had resentments that I needed to work through. And through working through those resentments, it spilled out on him. And so part of this person's angst was my spillage on him. So I brought that on myself. So I can look back at that and say, I had some part in that. Yeah, he did whatever. But my part in that was the way I didn't treat him as with compassion and concern and with grace. The way you guys treat me, right? You treat me with compassion and grace all the time, even when I step on it and I'm late. And so that caught up 3 years later. But by then, I had done a lot of step work on that, so I was able to kind of weather that storm. But what's the first thing I did? I went to a meeting. I called my sponsor. I prayed. I called my network. Because that's what you taught me to do. No matter how the wind is blowing, whatever's going on in my life, that's become muscle memory for me, no matter what's going on. Go to a meeting, call your sponsor, pray, call your network. Get out of your head, out of your butt, and then get into service. So I've done all of those things to try and get through, or not try, to get through and grow from that opportunity. I will say that I don't wish that on anyone in a 6 month time period. But I will tell you that I've probably had more spiritual growth in the last 6 or 7 months than I've had in 16 years. It's a hard way to do it, so keep up your program. Keep going to meetings. Keep talking to your sponsor. Keep working the steps. As I was taught, if I'm not working the steps, then I'm going backwards. Right? If I'm not growing, then I'm going backwards, and I'm getting closer to a drink. And I've seen people come back from relapses, and it doesn't look pretty, it doesn't look comfortable, and God bless you for coming back. Because you let me know that it's not safe out there. Right? I was reading an article today, I glanced at it, I don't read them that much anymore. It said, alcohol is bad for you. I was like, yeah. Right, it's unhealthy. Who knew, right? You can look at my medical records, perfect set testimony to that. So the one thing that I found out about my father, who was a loving and kind man, is that he died from this disease. I didn't know that. And so this disease hides. Right? I was able to hide it for so many years. People thought I didn't drink. They thought that I didn't drink much. But I couldn't hide it any longer. I couldn't hide who I was or wasn't. And you learned when it came out. He stopped about 3 or 4 years before he passed away. He was never mean. He was always loving. He was always there. So he was the perfect functional alcoholic, right? But his liver was not happy. So I would tell you, dying from liver disease, from this disease, is a long, painful death. I've seen it with my own eyes, and I don't want to experience it. God bless him for hanging in there as long as he did and being the man that he was. So now, what's happening now? I get caught up in all of that, and at the same time going through all of that, this wonderful thing that I said would never happen, happened. Right? And I'm almost afraid to say it, but I'm going to say it. Father passed one day, 2 weeks later, I was ordained into the church, of the Episcopal Church. And I was like, I have a past. I can't ever do anything. People are going to know about my past. And my past is being used not only there, but here to help other people. Because I've been where you are. I know those feelings. I know what it's like to feel like there's no tomorrow. But I tell you, there is a tomorrow. If we live 24 hours a day and just stay where our feet are, we can do all sorts of things. They say in the literature that we're smarter than average, and I believe that. I know it's true for me, I don't know about you. But I don't know if it's true for me or not. But what I will tell you is that you have the capability, we have the capability to be more than we think we can. So don't kick yourself for what you've done in the past, because that's who you were, not who you are. And I had to learn that. The things that I did were just things that I did. Good or bad. I did some good things too. That's in hope, not who I am today. And when I make those mistakes 3 years ago, they come back on a Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock with a phone call that says, read this letter, pack your crap and go. I know what to do when that happens. you guys have instilled in me exactly what to do. Don't whine, don't be a victim, get up and go and do your stuff. Now, I was a victim for like probably a month. So I got my head wrapped around and did some more stuff with it. But you guys hung in there with me. Every time something has happened, good or bad, in my life, you have been there. And I thank you for that. I always know, no matter what meeting I go to, no matter where I go, I can say whatever, and you guys are there for me. And we're there for each other. We're strangers, but we're not. Right? I'm sitting next to a young lady who has 18 days, and it's like, wow, that's like really precious. I'm not going to say your name, but stick instead. Enjoy the ride, because it only gets better. There'll be some bumps. That's okay. Those are learning opportunities. That's all I have. Thank you.
All right, let's have one more round of applause for our speakers. We'll be passing the basket in accordance with our seventh tradition. If you would like to contribute electronically, please see our treasurer, who is standing up, raising their hand now. And someone's coming up to do the chips. I can't remember who.
Josh, alcoholic.